clear as a bell. Excellent. Well, thank you, everyone. It's a pleasure to be speaking to all of you in Edinburgh today from beautiful, cloudy, and almost wintry Moncton here in Canada. I have a short time and lots of content, and I'd like to leave a little bit of time for comments and questions, so I'm going to get right to it. I have three major objectives today. I'd like to talk to you a bit about the Connectivism and Connective Knowledge online course that George Siemens and I are presenting, since this represents what we believe to be the way forward in the field of online learning. In the course of that, I want to talk about the Grasshopper application that I've coded and that I'm using for my website, for the Connectivism course, and a number of other projects. And I'm going to want to wrap up as well, talking about, first of all, some general principles of design, and also talking a little bit about the future from where I see it here. The title of the talk is International Insight. That's because it's the only topic name I could find on the program. So these are my insights, and it's somewhat international, so I hope that kind of works. I hope that's a good talk for you, and if not, I'm sure someone will let me know before I get too far into it. So anyhow, it's a pleasure to be talking to you all here today. So I want to talk first of all about the course. George Siemens and I are ushering roughly 1,900 right now. The subscriptions to the daily are about $18.95. Through the 12-week online course, we're in week 7 right now, which is titled Power and Control. I'll talk about that a little bit in a bit. The way we've set this course up is some of the students paid tuition and are taking the course through the University of Manitoba. It's part of the certificate in adult and continuing education, and it's also part of another certificate. I forget the exact name of it, but it's on something like future learning technologies or something like that. That's about 30 people, not even that many, have signed up for the course to pay tuition and get credit. The bulk of the 1900 students are attending the course as open students. They are not paying any tuition. However, the idea is they can fully participate in the course and all the discussions, all the materials, etc. So, like I said, the course is being offered through the University of Manitoba. It's 12 weeks long, so there's an end in sight. We're more than halfway through, and we're both still alive, or at least I assume George is. Last I heard of him, he was on his way to Australia. And the idea of the course is that We're exploring the concepts of connectivism, which is the theory of learning that George first named a few years ago and that he and I have been working on for a number of years now, and connective knowledge and topics involved in that. Connectivism is at its heart the thesis that knowledge is distributed across a network of connections, and therefore that learning, quite literally, consists of the ability to construct and traverse these networks. Now, it's kind of a hard concept to get a handle on because it flies in the face of our traditional theories of learning, which are something along the lines of stuffing the head with facts or, you know, having sentences in the brain that consist of facts. And connectivism looks at learning very differently. There are two aspects to it, at minimum two aspects of it. One aspect of it is the actual connection between neurons that happens in the brain, and that's more where my emphasis lies. But also, there is the idea of learning in society as connections between people, and that's where a lot of George's emphasis is. But the concepts and the principles at both of these different levels are the same, and interestingly as well, what happens at one level impacts what happens at the other level and vice versa. So what we've tried to do is offer an example of connectivism by teaching a course about connectivism using connectivist, more or less, methodologies. So what we're saying to our students and to the world at large is that the course that we're offering is probably the best early example of what we mean. So We've basically constructed the course on connectivist principles, although keeping in mind, and you know, I've already had some comments about this, strictly speaking, a course with a start date, an end date, and a university certificate, that's not really all connectivist. So right off the bat, we've sort of began to mitigate a little bit the full impact of connectivism. So this course should be thought of as more a transition event than full-fledged connectivism. Anyhow, we sketched what we wanted to do in the course, then we arrayed the set of resources we wanted to bring to bear, and then the students took over basically that physical design of the course. So here's what we laid out. First of all, we had a wiki. We actually ran this wiki through the summer and constructed the course outline, the assignments, the readings, and all that through the wiki. And so people were able to contribute to the creation of the course by coming in and editing the wiki. Now, frankly, not a whole lot of that happened, but the opportunity, was there. Excuse me, I got a bug in my throat here. We advertised the course actually very minimally. We posted it. I posted it in my newsletter. George posted it in his blogs. And then we started to take enrollment. George basically collected email addresses. And we started up a course blog where we began to talk about the planning of the course so that people could see the course coming together and then decide whether or not to enroll. I think a lot of people just enrolled because they were curious. You look at what's happened through the rollout of the course so far, and you know, we don't have 1,900 really active students. We have 1,900 people kind of keeping an eye on things, and a much smaller core of really active students. So we set up readings. I probably would have made more and smaller readings. We tended to follow readings that were suggested by George, which were more academic. They were longer readings, and it's six of one, half dozen of the other. And our reading lists have sort of been shifting as we've been progressing through the course, trying to adapt the readings to the people that we actually have in the course. Here's the course blog. The course blog is just a standard WordPress blog. It's hosted on the University of Manitoba web server, and we've been adding articles to it on a regular basis, semi-regular basis, let's be honest about this. We also set up a course Moodle forum that's also running on the University of Manitoba server. Not my favorite tool in the world because it's a threaded discussion list, and I've never been really comfortable with threaded discussion lists. Nonetheless, the Moodle forum has attracted a lot of interest, especially at the beginning of the course. It attracted some people whose main intent was to disrupt the course, and so we went through a couple of weeks of that. Now, they've mostly gone away. The discussion has flared up, flared down. This past week, in fact, on Monday of this week, with the subject for week 7 being power, authority, and control in online learning, I went into the Moodle and as an administrator automatically subscribed everybody in the course to the forums for this week. And as you can imagine, especially in an open course, the reaction to that was immediate and mostly negative. So I found that very interesting, and from my own perspective, I think there's an irony there that people who are mostly teachers and therefore mostly people who exert authority in their own classroom on a regular daily basis were very strongly rebelling against what was really a very minor show of authority in our open course. I think there's a lesson in the shifting perspectives, the shifting expectations that are taking place, where you know the authority that we've taken for granted all along is an authority that will be regarded as an abuse of authority as we go forward into these more and more open online environments. So anyhow, we began our Moodle forum with introductions, and then we got into the discussion itself. Another thing we did is we set up a PageFlakes site. PageFlakes runs on the PageFlakes site, of course, and we began aggregating results from all kinds of services. We put out a recommended tag, CCK08, and asked people to tag their blog, to tag their delicious posts, whatever. And now this PageFlakes site aggregates the TechNorati search results. It aggregates the delicious results. It also shows us the weather in Manitoba. I'm not sure how relevant that is, but that's the way we set it up. We've also got synchronous components to the course. We have Illuminate discussions twice on Wednesdays. We were just going to have one on Wednesdays, but we have a very international enrollment for this course, including a lot of people from Australia and East Asia, and consequently we had to add a second session in our evening, which would be their morning. Both sessions have been very well attended throughout this course. We haven't broken the Illuminate license. We set the Illuminate license to something like 200 seats, and we haven't broken that, although we've come close a couple of times. Again, it's slowing off now that we're in week 7. On Friday as well, George and I, with the very able hosting of Dave Cormier, have been having discussions with ourselves. And the way we've set that up is George and I and Dave set up a Skype conference, and then we just chatted back and forth, just a conversation, very interactive on Skype. And then Dave was taking that Skype output feed and feeding it into Ustream. Now, I put that all into the past tense because Ustream has proven to be very unreliable through this course. The first few weeks, four or five weeks were really good. Then the bottom fell out of Ustream, and it has been quite literally impossible for us to actually connect to a server in order to do our broadcast. And that's happened to me, it's happened to Dave, and it's happened in multiple locations, so we know it's Ustream and not us. So we've been switching over to Illuminate for the Friday discussions as well. Not quite as good because it's not quite as interactive. We've also been Twittering. Mostly George has been Twittering. I Twitter a little bit. I update my Facebook status, and then my Facebook status automatically goes out to Twitter. Again, you can see the CCK08 tag that we're using. And these Twitter feeds can be searched and aggregated. If you go to twitter.com/CCK08, you see all the Twitters from all the Twitterers about this course. The other major course component has been my own software called Grasshopper. I love the name. Grasshopper is some open source software that I have produced. I use it for my own website, and I've also used it to support this course. Grasshopper, the main idea of Grasshopper is that it's intended to be a personal learning environment. Now, for this course, it has become, for all practical purposes, a personal teaching environment. But really, there isn't really any difference, right? In a connectivist world, the act of teaching is the same as the act of learning. And basically, the act is you connect to all of these things, and you can see in the slide there, the famous future VLE slide. So you connect to Live, Journal 43 Things, Flickr, whatever your RSS sources are out there, aggregate the material, and then in your environment, in my case, Grasshopper, you do your creation. You do your remixing, your repurposing, you add value, you add content, and then you send it out. And Grasshopper sends it out either as an email newsletter or as an RSS feed or whatever. Here's the architecture of Grasshopper, basically, and as you can see, the content comes in. There's identity and local files that play a role. There's the editing window, and then it goes out into RSS feeds or to someplace out on the internet as a whole. Not all of this is functioning in Grasshopper at this point, but a good chunk of it is. Here's the login screen that I use for Grasshopper. The way I've set up Grasshopper, as I say, it's intended to be a personal learning system. What that means is that each person who would be participating using this software would have their own instance of Grasshopper. And so this is my instance. You would have your own instance. The idea is that it's set up as though it's your personal blog or as though it's your personal MySpace page or Facebook page, only it's standalone. It's not part of some larger site. Your blog, your personal space is the site. And other people can come in, they can have accounts on your system so they can put in comments and things like that. But you are the administrator, you run the content. You determine what comes in, you determine what goes out. So here's what visitors to my site see and what visitors to the Connectivism course would have seen. They can sign up for my site, and then they can sign up to get a newsletter. I wonder if this pointer even works. How's that? There we go. That's kind of like the laser pointer. I don't know if you can see the laser pointer at all. So I know I have video, but if I point, that doesn't really help. Although it's a neat 3D effect, isn't it? Ooh. Sorry, I couldn't resist. I love these toys. That's why I keep playing with them. Anyhow, the idea here is now the people signing up for the course, they would have seen just one newsletter that they can sign up for. People visiting my site, there's 5, and you can set up any number of newsletters that you want. Here's the main page for the Connectivism and Connective Knowledge course. Now, this page, it's using the same template as the stuff on the University of Manitoba, but as you can see from the URL, it's running off of my site. So one of the things that the Grasshopper software does that proves to be very important for students is it automatically archives all of the pages. And as you can see, it just sets up a neat little calendar display. Any page can be archived in this way, and then if you fall behind, you just click on the relevant page. On my own personal website, I've created quite a large number of pages. The way Grasshopper works is each page can be a newsletter, or each page can be a standalone web page. It's totally up to you. You decide. If you create a page, then that page can become a newsletter. It can also become an RSS feed. Again, that's totally up to you. It supports all of these different functions. Here's a typical page editing screen on Grasshopper. If you look closely here, it'd take a miracle to actually read that text. But what that is a set of commands telling Grasshopper what data to retrieve from the database and display and how to display it and under what conditions. So you have, database equals presentations, for example, number equals 20, format equals email, because this is an email page, expires equals 16, so no presentations older than 16 hours. Sort equals creation date, DSC, so show the most recent first. So the idea in Grasshopper is you can have any number of different content types, and then you can display entities of these different content types on your page. This is not atypical. It's a bit more advanced than what you can do on content management systems like Drupal or Plone or whatever, which is why I use my own system instead of one of those. But this is the way things are going in the future, particularly with software like Ruby on Rails and other such things that are automatically taking database contents for you, automatically taking harvested contents, and then displaying it in a predefined way. Now, as I say, Grasshopper aggregates contents from out there on the web. Here is the feed management screen on my own website. As you can see, this is a small percentage of about 500 feeds. The way the feed harvester works is that there's a queue of entries and then it harvests one each minute. It just works its way through the queue. You can approve the feeds, you can retire the feeds, you can have feeds that are pending, that have been submitted, and you can harvest any given feed at any given time. And here you see the harvester itself, which, again, the reason why I built my own harvester rather than using one of the ones that exists is my harvester not only harvests the feeds, it then analyzes the content of the feed And you can see for this thing here, it's harvested the feed, and then it's looked at the citations in the feed and analyzed that. So I have a data type in my database, which is a list of all the references from one blog post on one site to other blog posts on other sites. And so I'm able to build up that web of connections there. Another way of looking at the harvester, been a lot of stuff, especially over in your country, Tony Hurst doing all that work with Yahoo Pipes and that sort of stuff, just brilliant work. That's the same sort of thing as happens here on this mappings page in Grasshopper, where you choose your source. You can choose either a particular blog or a type of feed or even particular contents of feed, so your source can act as a filter. Then you choose the decimation, what kind of content type you want it to be, and then you map the elements. The feeds that come in as XML files, any sort of XML, so the data will come in as different data element types, title, name, description, whatever, and then you can map them to field tables on your own database. So that way you can treat as custom any content that comes in, so it doesn't really matter what the format it is. Out there in the world, by the time it ends up in your database, it's according to your format. Here's the viewer in Grasshopper, and this is an easy way to quickly zip through any particular content that your harvester has harvested. So the harvester harvests, and then you go into this viewer and just read these things one after another. Viewer's not perfect. I'm not completely happy with it. I've experimented with a bunch of different looks for it, and I'm going to continue to do that, of course. So when you're after your viewing, if you view something, if you like it, you just hit the blog this link in the viewer, and that pops you into the editing screen. Right now it's just a plain ordinary text editing screen, but you can see here it's structured. Sometimes this is known as structured blogging or pre-formatted blogging. So you're actually entering data, the title, the link that I'm talking about, the author that I'm talking about, the name of the website. This is what I do for my newsletter, but this is also how I handle work that I'm doing with the stuff that has been harvested. Grasshopper is open source. It's written in Perl. It's licensed under GPL. The code is available. It's, not plug and play, but it's close to plug and play in order to do a lot of things that you won't find in other software. But, it's version 0.1. It's experimental software. It's me trying to express some of these concepts. So, and the link for that is Grasshopper, grsshopper.downs.ca. So, we come back to the Connectivism course. We have the daily, which is, here's the daily you can see on the screen. This is what we're sending out to 1,900 people every day. The feedback that we've gotten from the students is that the daily is a lifeline. The daily is the thing that holds the course together. Otherwise, it would be just this wildly scattered kind of collection of resources. Here's Grasshopper, where I'm managing the content of the online course from the site administration screen. You can see the reader, the mailing list, and the harvester, and all of that there. Here's the feed harvester for Grasshopper in the CCK08 course. What we did is we asked each of the students, set up your own web presence somewhere out there on the internet. We don't care where it is, what it is, if it's Blogger, TypePad, Flickr, whatever, and then give us the RSS feed. So we've gotten the RSS feeds. When I took this screenshot, I hadn't approved them yet. So here are the things I have to approve, but all I need to do is click on the link. I can take a look at it very easily and then click on the link to approve it. So we got 170 feeds coming in from different students. So, and if people don't want to read these feeds on our site, Grasshopper automatically provides OPML exports of the feed list. So we had all the students submit their feeds, we approve them all, and then we export this in OPML. And I'll bet you there are students out there reading the other students' blogs or whatever using some other reader like Google Reader or Bloglines or whatever. So here's the introduction to the course. It was a video that George created to tell people about how we've set it up and how we've organized the course. And then the students took over. One student, right off the bat, created a course map. You really do want to have a look at this course map. This is the first version. It's really straightforward and simple. There's a new version that went out on the daily today. It looks like a map of a city. It's just this incredibly complex, totally interconnected set of resources created by students, resources created by us, and all of that. After 7 weeks, we've created quite a complex, structured course. Here's another course map. This is a map of where a certain percentage of the students are located. As you can see, we've got students from around the world who have enrolled in the course. Of course, somebody created a video to show students how to add themselves to this international course map. Now, as you see, this is what's happening here, right? We set up a basic structure, but now the students are adding their own resources, their own help, and their own aids to make this course more accessible to other people. Another student depicted the course as a Wordle and actually mapped the development of the course website in Wordle. So here's how it started. Here's how it looked about a week later. Here's how it looked another week after that. And you can see, interestingly, the content getting more and more complex as time goes by. We've had a lot of word of mouth and distribution of course content and course components back and forth. A lot of this stuff George and I don't even know about. It just sort of happens out there. We sometimes hear about it, we sometimes don't. Some of the students set up their own Google groups. The registered students also set up their own Google groups. It's a Google groups for registered students, which I thought was pretty neat. There have been translations of the course. There have been the Conectividas in Spain, for example, and various other translations. I believe there's a Portuguese, and I don't know all of the translations that are out there. This is a site, Dakita, and that's all I can tell you about this because I don't know what's happening on that site right now. Part of the thing, like what happened is students joined this course. You know, 1,900, 2,000 students, all of these resources, and their first reaction was, oh my God, I'm swamped. And we spent most of the first week of the course saying, well, look, this is connectivist learning. The idea of connectivist learning isn't you amass everything and assimilate the entire lot, because there's too much. There's too much out there in the world. There's too much in this course. So what we want you to do as students and what we will do as instructors is have a certain perspective, a certain point of view. Nobody's going to see everything in this course. We're each going to have our own perspective on the material in this course. And that's proven to be true. I either skipped a slide or put this in later. But the other thing I wanted to mention is a group of students also set up their own instance of the course, their own cohort of about 50 people on Second Life at the Chiobo online community. Now, I haven't been in there yet, but George has been in there. And so they're moving along in parallel as well. So that's, you know, the stuff that we're doing right now. And where's all of this going in the future? I borrowed this this approach from, where you can see the reference on the screen there, and that's actually from an IBM report. And when we look at where these technologies are going forward, it's very tempting to say, well, more mobile, more social web, more of this, more of that. But really, that's a technology-centered way of looking at what online learning is going to look like in the future. And I think this is a better approach. This basically breaks down what we do in learning into four basic areas: learning from co-location, learning from collaboration, learning from interaction, learning from information. These four ways represent four major strategies of learning in the future. And now for each of them, we see what learning is going to be like. And unfortunately, the spacing of this slide didn't come out exactly the way I would like. But we think about co-location. Typically, co-location, we think about classrooms, classes, conferences, much like you guys are doing there, except I'm not co-located, but we'll leave that aside. It's the place where we do coaching and mentoring, interaction, where we play with things, where we create things. Our classrooms, our physical spaces where we conduct learning, are going to change dramatically because more and more technology and more varied technology will be available in these spaces. It won't be necessary to do presenting, for the most part, anymore in these spaces, because there are many other and much better ways of presenting content. And so these spaces will become work and creativity spaces. The photograph there is a photo I took of MIT's Media Lab. You look at Media Lab, that's one of their classrooms, if you can believe it. You can see some chairs and tables, but more to the point, you see really neat things, all the equipment that they use. And what they're doing is they're playing and creating with all of this equipment, but they're learning about the equipment and they're learning about the concepts that underlie the equipment. Collaboration. This is what I look like when I'm doing what I'm doing here at home. So that's the home office. I really hate that color paint on the wall, and that's going to change one day. But basically, collaboration is conferencing, meeting, conversation, co-creation, all of that sort of thing. And as this talk demonstrates, it's no longer necessary to be there in person in order for a collaboration to occur. Online collaboration is becoming more of the norm, and this collaboration itself is becoming more immersive, more multimedia. You should be seeing my picture up there on the screen, as well as the slides. So here, and of course, you better be hearing my audio. So now we've got three major media working together for this particular collaboration. And if it were more interactive, I would be seeing your video, I would be hearing your voices, and we'd be having this conversation. This more and more is going to be the norm in the future. Our collaborations will become more multimedia, more immediate, bigger. We have an advanced communication environment, ACE room here. We have huge, huge, big screens. When we have a video conference with people in the other room, they are life-size. And believe me, that makes a difference in the collaboration. The next major strategy is interaction. Everybody talks about games and everybody talks about simulations. These are going to be important, although in the future, but keep in mind, this is just one of the four learning strategies. They're not going to be everything, but we are going to see more and more games and simulations. The real thing that's happening here in this world is games and simulations have traditionally been things that other people would produce and then you would play with them or work with them. More and more, games and simulations are becoming things that you produce and you share with other people. And the example of that is the mod kits that come with Civilization. There's a photo of Civilization on the screen there. And it's a game where you conquer the world, but with the mod kit, you can change the whole concept, the whole interaction in that game, and it might not be about conquering the world, it might be about building the best culture, or having the most successful space program. Finally, information, and this is the traditional strategy of learning, where we think about lectures, books, conferences, web pages, video, all of that. Information is becoming ubiquitous. We used to have three channels, three television channels, then we got six when we got cable, then we got 57 channels and nothing was on, as Bruce Springsteen said, and now we have an uncountable number of channels. This is Stephen Colbert, who's a popular comedian here, and you can view Stephen Colbert on the television, or you can view Stephen Colbert, as I often do, on the web. What's important here is that information is becoming free, it's becoming ubiquitous, it's easily found. In fact, there's too much information, which is why it's free. And so learning going forward is going to be about managing this information, managing this flow of information, I talk from time to time about the semantic social network. What this is the application of technologies like Grasshopper to organize and filter the information coming in. Again, we have to treat information from the perspective of a connectivist course, where we cannot assimilate it all. It's not possible to assimilate it all. We can only get a perspective. We can only get a point of view. So here we have the students creating their perspectives, their point of views in the course, Second Life, Dijo, Delicious, WordPress, and on and on and on it goes. How did we set this up? Four major principles. First of all, diversity. We wanted to encourage a diverse range of students. We wanted to cover diverse subjects, and we wanted them to employ diverse technologies and have all kinds of different conversations in different places. Secondly, autonomy. This is why people got so upset when I took control in the Moodle form. It's an underlying principle of connectivist learning that students chart their own course as much as possible, as much as practical in the given situation. Doesn't mean there is no guidance. George and I have acted as guides throughout the course. What it does mean is that there is no power and control. People choose their own technology. They choose whether or not they want to participate in the discussion. They choose whether or not they want to subscribe to the daily newsletter. Third, interaction or connectedness. The idea here is that learning in this course is not simply a replication in the students of knowledge that exists in the instructor. The idea here is that the learning that takes place is more than exists in any individual. It's more than exists in the mind of the professor. It's more than exists even after the course in the mind of the student. Basically, if we think of the knowledge of this course as a whole, the knowledge almost exists as something separate over and above what is known by each and every member of the course. The people in the course, the students and the professors, have a perspective or point of view of that knowledge, but not a complete assimilation of that knowledge. Again, that idea of perspective or point of view becomes very important. Finally, openness. And that's the concept of an open course. It's the concept of open knowledge. We've tried very hard not to draw barriers between in the course and out of the course. There are certain subscriptions that you just have to do, otherwise you won't get the newsletter, or otherwise you can't post comments in the discussion list. But basically, people can come into the course, leave the course as they wish. We've seen something like a community forum in the members that are at the center of the course. We've seen surrounding that a much larger group of people who are partially engaged in the course, and some people who are very weakly engaged in the course. And that's the model that we wanted, because we want a wide, you know, a diverse set of ties, a diverse set of connections in this, in and among the students in this course. The strong connections among the core community, or I should say more accurately, the various core communities, and then the weak ties, which allow connections, but more filtered, more judiciously chosen connections between other members of the course. Those four principles underlie the design of the course, they underlie the theory of connectivism, and I think that they will be, to a large degree, descriptive of learning as we go forward. So that basically is my presentation. You can find all kinds of more things. I can't believe I just said it that way. You can find much more on my website, and there it is in front of you. So thank you very much, and I'd be very happy to entertain any comments or questions you have at this time. Well, the interactions have all been interesting. I'm not sure what would constitute unusual in this context. We've had everything from people who've come in and called us techno-communists to people who've decided that George and I actually don't really know anything about connectivism at all, and to people who've been very supportive. People with very wide points of view on the matter. One person is interpreting everything we do from the perspective of evangelical Christianity, and so it's Jesus the connectivist, that sort of perspective, which I find a very interesting perspective. The interactions set up among the students by themselves, I think, have been interesting and perhaps unusual. For example, the enrolled students decided that having a discussion list and having the online sessions wasn't enough. They set up their own private WebEx conference that they have every Sunday. And that's fine. They do that every Sunday. I haven't gone to that. I don't think George goes to that. But that's what they do. And that's how they've created their own cohort within the course. And that's the sort of thing we've tried to encourage. You know, every day there's something. I've been mostly doing the daily. And every day I see something interesting. And depending on your perspective, something unusual. Well, thank you very much, and again, in the purest connectivist tradition, the slides and the audio, I've been recording the audio on my side, will be available on my website later today for you to download, slice, dice, do whatever you would like with, and thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. I've really enjoyed it. Bye, everyone.